Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS, or if you're tuning in via our app, 98.9 FM, for the best country, which you can download for free. So please do so. Or if you're tuning in via our website, 98.9fm.com.au. Via our website, Let's Talk is podcasted. So go to our website, hit the links to podcast and Let's Talk, and you can listen to previous Let's Talk programs when you feel like. Also, you can stream us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Those platforms beaming us into your communities. And as always, it is great to have your company. It's a bit overcast. Well, it is really overcast today. It was sprinkling a bit and raining late last night as well. Some nice cool weather today, which is good. It wasn't hot like on Saturday morning. Had to get the hose and the sprinkler out for the kids in the backyard. They loved it. just as you heard on NIRS, the death of three Aboriginal people in custody. Very sad time for family members, and no family member should have to deal with the loss of a loved one who has passed away in custody. It's in Victoria and also in New South Wales. It's sad because this year, as I've mentioned previously, marks the 30th anniversary of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which is coming up, I believe, next month. And these are, it's a very significant milestone for our mob. And one of the reasons why I think it's so significant is because, sadly, mob is still fighting for justice for the family members and, you know, for the conviction or, I guess you could say, the conviction of people who have played a part in the death of Aboriginal people. And it's sad because, as you would have remember, last year myself and Karina interviewed multiple family members of loved ones who have died in custody. Also, you know, last year, while under the pandemic, we, the world was brought to the attention of the brutalization of black bodies, one being George Floyd in America, which sort of sparked this global push and action for justice. And we saw that sort of creep over here, and we saw the many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander names being mentioned and family members being spoke about as well, and hearing from family members after that time as well. On the program this morning with me is a family member of a loved one who has sadly died in custody. I'm going to bring them in right now. Good morning, sis. Thanks for joining us on Let's Talk.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Just before we go any further, could I get you to tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from, please?
My name's Talia Reynolds. I'm in Sydney, and my mob's from Armidale. We're from the Anawan tribe.
Deadly. Thank you for that. As I mentioned, this year marks the 30th anniversary of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. Last year was a massive year, you know, in terms of public response to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lives who have been lost. When you think of, you know, last year at the height of sort of the pandemic, due to sort of what happened in the United States, with an African American man dying in police custody, last year you couldn't switch off sort of social media without sort of hearing something in regards to police brutality, and then there was a focus. Then there was something highlighted on Australia, the issues of police brutality. That time last year, do you remember how that was making you feel? And you know, did you sort of feel a sense of a sense like, you know, people are starting to sort of realise what is happening in this country?
Yeah. When that happened, because we had all the Black Lives Matter movements around here in Australia, it was great. You've seen that movement happening here. It's sad that it took something like George Floyd to happen for it to hit mainstream media here in Australia. It took off. We got a lot of attention, but it then quickly died down again. The big thing that I say is that, you know, we get a lot of people on board when these things hit media, but then it dies down. And it's just remembering that it's just not a, what would you call it? Like a, you know, just a phase. And it's died off again a bit. We recently just had the findings from our brother's death, and you know, that's hit media again a little bit, and it's unfortunately because of the three more deaths again, it's hitting the media, but then it dies down. We need to keep it up there in the top of priority and keep that on the agenda in the new mainstream news. That's the biggest where we need to hit, is the mainstream news.
And if it's all right with you, and I guess if it's, you know, and if legally we can talk about the hearing, would love to sort of mention that, sometimes talk about that, in a bit as well. But you raised some really important points, you know, at the, you know, the first rally, cause there was a whole bunch of rallies up here in Brisbane. You know, we had the first really, really big Black Lives Matter one. And we saw, you know, I reckon in my own sort of, you know, looking at it and stuff, and other people, we sort of come to the conclusion that there may have been like 60,000 people here in Brisbane alone that attended that rally. Then we had one literally a month later, and I believe this was just after the death of another Aboriginal woman here, in police custody in the watch house. And literally like not even half of the people sort of turned up, to that rally, to support the family members of Aunty Sherry Tilbury Fisher. But you know what I mean? Like, as always, the families and community that have been following these, injustices still support and still carry on as well. You know, how was it the other day when, you know, are you still getting the amount of support that is really needed from community?
Yes. So the people, you know, the mob that we had from the beginning, they've been there from the word go. They've been great in turning up and supporting, and, you know, they've been great. But, again, I think we fall short when we don't have the big media outlets coming. And that's what we need, to get more awareness out there, to have more support. It's just the awareness. It lacks to the greater community.
And when you think of that, why do you think sort of the big media outlets don't turn up
I suppose turning a blind eye is better than recognizing that this is happening here in Australia. It saddens me that they don't know, like a lot of people don't think it happens here.
Well, I remember at the height of sort of the protest in America, and I don't know if you remember seeing last year, there was like this video of this white Australian journalist. I think she was doing like a cross back to Australia, and like, you know, the people participating in the rally, I think, told her, you know, like, you know what's going on here, don't ask silly questions. And just before they cut the interview, she was like, oh, thank you for your time. people back home in Australia don't really know much about police brutality. You know, and it's sad because, like, sometimes these are the people, you know, reporting on our issues, not just globally but locally as well. Do you feel like when you talk to mainstream media, there is a bit of disconnect in sort of understanding or knowing that these things happen as well?
100%. It's, you know, it's the attitude as well. Like, the media can sway the audience a lot, and it's the attitude that our mob have. That, well, they're in jail, so they must, you know, they're in jail in the first place. Come on, like, you don't know the circumstances that led them up to get to where they were. There's innocent people going to jail. The incarceration rates are huge. The, you know, people on remand that are then, by the time they get sentenced, they get to walk out because they've served way over time, or, you know, the evidence isn't there. And it's just, it starts even the beginning before even getting into custody or being in custody. You know, the high representation that we have in there, it's not right.
Oh, definitely, you know, and I think you just hit a few sort of key things, you know, Aboriginal people being put on remand, you know, till their court hearing, and most times have sort of served, you know, time well spent, and then they get let out because, yeah, you know, the evidence isn't there, or they've spent, you know, enough time in there to sort of constitute their sentencing as well. And the fact that, you know, majority of people, Aboriginal people, I'm sure, that are locked in there, are locked in because of fines and because of all these other things as well. And we see campaigns from Sisters Inside, you know, the Free Her campaign, which is an amazing campaign that we saw kick off for Western Australia, where Aboriginal women were being locked up, paid fines. it's interesting, you know, when we talk about black deaths in custody in this country, and still, you know, as long as it's been happening, and as long as Aboriginal people have been fighting for justice, we still have sort of pockets in our community who don't understand. And obviously, it shows the disconnect between the issues that First Nations people in this country still have to deal with and fight for justice for as well. For our listeners, and I do apologize if this sort of, you know, makes you upset, and if you at any time, if you want to sort of wrap up and not talk, totally understandable, sis. But for our listeners, could you sort of give us let us know what happened to your brother in custody as well, and how he passed away?
Yeah, no drama. So, you know, what I would first start off with is that, I took for granted this whole issue myself previously, until it happened to my brother. And, you know, you always think, oh, that won't happen to my family. I would say make sure you check in with your loved ones. If they're in custody, ring them, ask them that they're getting the proper medical care, ask them that they're seeing doctors if they're unwell. Do that. So what happened to Nathan in 2018, he had a 4-month sentence. He was due out in a week. He'd been sick probably the week prior with cold and flu, so he died of an asthma attack. So he had a cold and flu leading up to it. On the 31st of August of 2018, he had a severe asthma attack. You know, the correctional officers just took their time dawdling over to Nathan. He called 3 or 4 times at the intercom saying he couldn't breathe, he needs a nurse. It took them 11 minutes. They had no real explanation as to why they took so long. And, you know, the nurse got there. She gave him an injection of naloxone, which is to reverse the drug overdose. Even though the other inmates were there saying, you know, he's having an asthma attack, he can't breathe. So you know, she went in with that preconceived thought that it's a drug overdose and, you know, that's what she treated him for. We found our family focused on that night, the response that night and the care he didn't get. But it was even more traumatizing hearing the care he didn't get the leading 3 months, the leading months up to that. He'd been to the clinic multiple times. He had several puffers, and the coroner gave her findings. We got that last Thursday, actually, and her findings were, you know, the cause of death was a natural cause because it was an asthma attack. But she acknowledges that the manner of death was natural causes due to the deficiencies that Justice Health and Correctional New South Wales gave him.
It's sad to hear that as well, because in recent times as well, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I do apologise if I am, to any listeners out there, especially family members, it seems that, you know, quite a few Aboriginal deaths in custody nowadays seems to be sort of dubbed like dying of natural causes. And we see like medical, I don't know if you call it medical negligence, sort of comes into play where the lack of, whether you want to say believability to how Aboriginal people are feeling in this time, you know, going through excruciating pain, and that not taking into account, you know, the importance of sort of what is happening as well. Do you feel there is quite a bit of medical negligence happening in these cases?
100%. There is, I think we're one of the lucky families that got a decent coroner that did outline those neglect. Like, there was huge neglect happening with his medical care. But, you know, there's great. She acknowledged that. But the issue is there's no accountability for any doctor or corrective services staff. So therefore, they hide behind the system. So what's going to change? Like, we need individual accountability. Like, if the doctor, you know, that's your job and you have a board, the medical board that you've got to adhered by, yet you didn't give that care, yet you look after prisoners over 5 different prisons. And you didn't give it, but he wasn't sent for review. Like, that, I think once we get individual accountability, that's when we might see change. Because all those people that engage with my brother, they're all still sitting in their jobs. Mm. So they're all hiding behind a system.
Mm. Sadly, so I think,
how are we going to see major change when they keep hiding behind that system?
And people still, you know, stay employed in those professions as well. Just for the listeners as well, if you are tuning in, I'm talking to the sister of Nathan Reynolds, Talia Reynolds. You know, I do appreciate you coming on the program as well. Just really quickly, a couple of weeks ago, I had a chat to Alison Whittaker, a Gomeroi poet, academic researcher, doing amazing work within this field. And one of the things I chatted to her about as well is what sort of constitutes as a death in custody. It's a very, very broad scope, you know. One of the reasons why I wanted to sort of bring this up, and because I just wanted to mention some of the names of people that are just popping in my head when I'm hearing you talk as well. So obviously the obvious one is people being brutalized in custody. Then another huge factor as well as sort of medical negligence as well, that has played a big part in that as well. You know, and obviously what we're hearing with Nathan's case is the same. You know, Miss Jew as well, in Western Australia, you know, and I think maybe the same thing with Aunty Tanya Day as well, and, you know, many other cases around the country where we see Aunty Sherry Tilbury up here as well, you know, where we see this come into play, and then as I said before, those words as well, and you mentioned as well, dying by natural causes. My next question would be, do you believe that people can die in custody by natural causes? Do you think that's, you know, do you think those things are preventable? In these circumstances, you know, where somebody like your brother and the other cellmates were saying, you know, he's having problems breathing.
Yep.
And they result that sort of as, you know, a natural death, you know. Do you think that those things can be prevented?
100%. It was prevented. He had many red flags, we heard from specialists. So there is the lead up. So if he had the proper care that he should have received, his asthma, you know, it would have been better under controlled, and it could have not led to that fatal asthma attack. Mm. But they didn't give the care leading up to that. So it's a very fine line we tread on when you say natural causes, because realistically, it probably wouldn't happen if his asthma was under control. So when you think about it in that regard, well, then no, it's not a natural. Well, they say natural causes, like the death. So you've got the cause of death. It should say, you know, an asthma attack due to the deficiencies given by Justice, Health and Corrections. But it's that they don't acknowledge that. They only acknowledge that in the matter of death, but that should be the cause, because they were a cause to leave. They didn't give him the medical care that he needed. So that is a cause to his, that was a cause to lead up to his death.
Mm. When sort of hearing this as well, it reminds me of chatting with the family of Dave Dungay Jr. who passed away a few years ago as well. And sort of just reading some of the things I remember hearing and reading, when the police sort of, the guards stormed into his room, they were saying he was eating a pack of biscuits. And from talking with his family and hearing other interviews, he was a diabetic. And I think, you know, people who are diabetics and people who live with sort of chronic illnesses or other sort of illnesses know how to self-manage what they're going through as well, and know sort of what it is that they need to sort of take that can, benefit how they're feeling. And I believe he was eating a packet of, you know, biscuits was good for him, because he knew how to manage what he had as well. And you hear like the police coming in and saying, put these down as well. It just sort of reminds me of that. And I'm sure your brother knew how to manage what he was dealing with as well. And, you know, and on any indication of when he needed medical help and support, he called for it as well. So from the hearing last week, what's happening next, and where to next for yourself and the rest of the family?
So, you know, we got the coroner handed down her findings and recommendations. Where obviously, you know, some things were acknowledged, which is great. I think we've got more than what other families have gotten. But, you know, there's no accountability. And that's what I want. Like, we've got a doctor still sitting in his job that's looking after, you know, our other family that's in there, our mob that's in there. And, you know, if he's just going to do, you know, a half a job, this isn't going to stop. So this isn't the end. It's accountability now that I'll be going for, like the doctor to be reviewed, you know, by the medical board. They can make the decision, but at least, you know, that's he's got to be reviewed. He didn't give the care. So there's probably other inmates that aren't getting the proper care, but he's still sitting in their jobs. So we will go down that avenue. We've had great support. Like, we've got Asthma Australia that's come on board and wanted to, they've released a statement, you know, they want to work with Justice Health and Correctives New South Wales to bring asthma. You know, it's one of the five top self-reported health conditions in the prison system. So, you know, it's, we've got some really strong things to go with afterwards, like teaming up with Asthma Australia. They've put their hand up, you know, to give, you know, touch base with those guys. So, you know, it's just more awareness that we, you know, we'll keep doing and fighting for, and, you know, the accountability. And unfortunately, there's other families, you know, there's been three in the last week. So, you know, we're here to offer our support to those other families. And, yeah, keep it on, just keep it on everyone's agenda. That's what we're going to be there. We're going to be that annoying family that keeps bringing it up. But as long as we keep bringing it up, it keeps it on the agenda.
Definitely. One thing that you know, that I've seen from afar as well is the many different families sort of coming together. Has that been sort of the case with yourself and other family members? Like, you know, have you sort of connected with the family of Dave Dungay and other family members of Aboriginal people who have died in custody?
Yeah, so, you know, Ani Latoya, David Dungay's mum, we, you know, I am very thankful, you know, the Dungay family, where I'm very thankful, and I, you know, I've said to them before, without those guys, I probably wouldn't have the fire in my belly that I've got, because I'm, you know, being around them and they're seeing their fight for justice gives me the fire in my belly that I need. I know, you know, Michaela, my sister, she's in contact with Tanya Day's daughter, and she's offered a lot of support to Michaela. So we've definitely got, we're very lucky, we've got a lot of support, and that keeps us fighting. And I don't think they'll really ever understand the gravity that they've given us, and the, you know, the fight and the fire that they've given us.
And how important is it, you know, when going through this battle, to have those people, like you mentioned, you know, it sort of, it's empowered you, you know, to continue to fight. But, you know, when looking and reading what is happening to other families, you know, pretty much in like those three cases, it was pretty much, you could say, like, as a result, there was medical negligence that played a massive part, you know. So these three cases are very, very similar in terms of, when looking at sort of, how the findings have been handed down as well. How important is it to have connections with these families and you know, you know, while taking up this battle, having these other people around as well?
I think it's really strong. You really need it. I think, you know, we would have fought, but I think without these other families going through and offering their support, I think, you know, you may take for granted a little bit of how much you rely on those other families and their support, and just knowing, like, even if you don't have to speak with them, you know, every day or whatever, you know that they're there and they're more than happy to help. Because unfortunately, there's families out there that won't have that strong, you know, they come in and they won't be as strong. I've got a big family, lucky enough for me, but there's families that, you know, that it's really hard to go through this. And, you know, I've put my grief aside and, you know, haven't grieved losing my brother. And I think families really need that other support, and that if, you know, they know a family member or they've known someone in the community that has gone through it, tell them to definitely reach out to a family that has been through it, because we've all sat in the same boat. It's that when you rely on the other families, they're that bit stronger than what you are whilst going through it. So definitely reach out. They're all there to support all our mob. Doesn't matter what it is, reach out.
And I thank sis for that as well. And just lastly, I want to ask, you mentioned about, you know, keeping this on the tip of people's tongues and continuing to make people more aware of this. From sort of an outsider's point of view and for my listeners as well, how can we sort of stay up to date with what's happening? Are there sort of social media outlets, pages that we can follow to keep up to date with what's happening?
Absolutely. We've got Justice for Nathan Reynolds on Instagram and Twitter. You've got Tanya Day, there's the Facebook, and David Dungate Jr.'s got the Facebook. There's a lot of it. There's Stop Death in Custody Facebook pages you can follow. I think once you connect with one of those, you then start seeing, you know, you'll see more posts, and then you'll be able to see they create the events and then that you can attend and then share. It's definitely out there. I think once you just follow one, like, you know, David Dungate Jr. or Aunty Tanya Day, once you start following one, I think you start then getting connected and then, you know, you start share the event, share them on your Facebook. You know, if people want to scroll past, that's okay, but they've seen it. The people are going to see it. So share events, share facts.
Deadly. Awesome. Now, thanks, that sis. And to the listeners as well, please get on your social media and follow these accounts, and definitely follow the stories and the fight, because we do need justice for the families, and we do need to support these families as well in these times as well. This year does mark the 30th anniversary, and if that doesn't sort of say why we should support the families, then, you know, the non-accountability to the many hundreds of Aboriginal people should be why we support these families. Now, thank you for coming on the program this morning, sis, and sharing your story of courage and fight for justice with us.
Thanks for having me.
And if you are just tuning in, my guest this morning, Talia Reid, Talia Reynolds, the sister of Nathan Reynolds, speaking with us this morning about her brother's case and about why they continue to fight for justice as well. I'm just going to head to a quick song break. After that as well, I just want to update people in New South Wales as well. There is a panel and a forum happening next month as well to mark the anniversary of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody as well. I will play the song, and I'm hoping to have a chat with somebody from that organisation as well. You are listening to Let's Talk here on Murray Country.
Right of life, the pious said, forget the past is dead. But all I see in front of me is a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
I tear out the page, forget his age. Things called a cry, that's why he died. But I can't forget a silhouette of a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
The end product of Gadia Law is a viaduct for fang and claw, and a place to dwell like Roman's hell, of a concrete floor, a cell door. And John Pat,
he's there way are there in their minds now, deep within their appearance, a sidelong glance, a silly grin to remind them all of a gaudio wall, a concrete floor, a cell door, and John Pat.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
That was John Pat by Uncle Archie Roach and Paul Kelly. That song was written in regards to John Pat, a young man who lost his life in Roebourne in Western Australia. In a cell, that song details his death. I believe that and many Eddie Murray's passing were the catalyst behind the Royal Commission. Obviously, and the many other Aboriginal people who did die in custody. As I mentioned just before the break, and if you are just tuning in as well into Let's Talk, Tali Reynolds was my first guest. She is the sister of Nathan, an Aboriginal man who died in custody just weeks before he was due for release. And, you know, it's always sad that the families have to go through this to continue to fight for justice. You know, and it is, I feel very honored to have these discussions with these family members who continue to fight for justice. And I hope through our station and, you know, we can amplify the voices of these family members. Amplifying voices of these families are very, very important. And my next guest coming on the program does that, you know, very passionately, stands at the forefront with a lots of these families who have supported, who are going through this in New South Wales. My next guest is Lizzie Jarrett. Good morning, Lizzie. Sis, how are you going?
Inagay, brother. I'm good, thank you. How are you this morning?
Good, good, good. And just before we go any further, could you tell us your mob and your country, please?
My mob is Goombangia, Bundjalung and Dungaddy, and I'm currently benefiting on the Gadigal people's land.
Thanks, that sis. As I mentioned before as well, the importance that, you know, of giving platforms to family and supporting family, and I mentioned, you know, you have been doing that very courageously for quite some time now in Sydney. Just for our listeners, to give them a bit of context about some of the work you do and some of the families that you have supported over the years, well, what are some of those family and some of those campaigns?
Well, the main major lighting family that is my cousin David Dungay. So that's the main reason why I really chuck myself into this, because you don't believe it's going to happen to you until it does happen to your family. Before David passed away, I was always active with other families. But, you know, on the backside, just being that shoulder to cry on, just being that person to actually just... But now after my cousin, after the world watched the way he was killed and how they got away with it, I believe it's, you know, it's my duty to stand up forward loud and proud for these families that aren't quite loud and proud yet, because they're still going through the grieving process. They're still going through the reality that the system can just take away the life of their loved one and have no accountability. The Dungay family is my forefront. Then I've sat with the Chatfield family, is also my cousins over the mountain, where, you know, as you've seen how much horrendous stories around that young man. Yeah, like, very hard to talk, to be honest. But yeah, Chatfield family, Dungay family, Whittaker family, Fisher family, the Witten family, Reynolds family. To be honest, I don't even want to miss anybody. The Dew family, I've sat with case and case and family member after family member that have invited me and welcomed me to their circles, which I'm forever honoured to do, because it's very hard to be loud when you're grieving. It's very hard to be present when your family member is not with you and you're so lost and confused in why they're not here, how they're not here. So I'm very honoured and privileged to be welcomed by all the families that I mentioned and many more. If they would need me to come forward for them, I'm more than willing to.
Deadly work, sis. And, you know, seeing the stuff that you do, you know, is nothing but, you know, commemorations and, you know, a love for the work that you do, sis. And I'm sure that's the same for many other mob around the country as well. This year's a very, very important year. And in particular for the family members that you are supporting and the names that you have mentioned, it marks the 30th anniversary this year of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. I played a song, John Pat. That song was a catalyst in pushing for that as well. We've got to the mark, this year. Many people, like you just mentioned, are continuing to fight. How can we sort of amplify the voices of family members who are continuing to fight for justice?
I believe the way we are right now, how you are right now, Brother Bobo, making sure people are turning their radio on this morning and hearing these stories. Like, you know, journalists, get it out there, social media if we have to, because we know the mainstream media will not support us, will not put us in the forefront as just being some sort of pandemic that is the colonial racism, that is genocide upon us. So it's important that any avenue of noise we make, as long as the family gives grace for it, any avenue, whether it be from a street protest, to a parliamentary inquiry, to an inquest, to all the systematic avenues that we have to go through when it is a death in custody, which there are so many of. We have to make sure we are present as First Nations people. We are heard. The family are platformed. The family are heard in any way we can. Like I said, radio, TV, social media, articles, blogs, Twitter. Tick all the boxes that we can. They get the word out there to the mainstream. They keep ignoring us. That's the best way that's the only way we have.
I believe next month in Sydney, you're continuing to amplify those voices by putting a forum on as well. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Put in the what?
Next month, I believe it is, you're organising a forum to commemorate the 30th anniversary. Could you tell us a bit about that event you're holding?
At the moment, it's actually known as a rally.
That's
on the 10th, that's okay. And we're inviting all the families that I've said above and many more to come to Sydney with us and to stand here and make it known that 30 years, like you said, 30-year anniversary since the Royal Commission into this very thing. And yet we can stand here and visit 450-plus graves. So it's disgusting. It's absolutely it's important that the world understand that death in custody is a real pandemic against us. For blackfellas to go to jail, it's a death sentence. There's no in-between. If we don't come out in a box, we come out so institutionalised that we have to re-offend and go back in, or we come out with no support resources, so we're left in this limbo of how do I fit in society because all I'm known to is a criminal and I'm black. So on the 10th, April the 10th, we'll be here in Sydney, and we invite everybody and anybody out there listening to come along and help support these families and voice this and help make true change. Then on the 15th, again, we'll be meeting when the New South Wales Parliamentary Inquiry actually gives us some findings onto what they believe is relevant for our cause and for our future. After we've had family and family and family again, go and sit with them in the last year and put to them their cases, which were the Dungay family, the Chatfield family, the Reynolds family, the Whitakers. Yeah, there was a couple there that went inside and met in the House, in Parliament House, and had an inquiry with them. So on the 15th, we find their findings. So we'll have a definite another rally or meeting in Sydney to make sure that's publicly heard and put out there for all to understand what's really going on here.
And also I know the family have called to meet with the Prime Minister as well down in Canberra. Hopefully that can come to fruition as well, especially, on on the note of it being sort of the 30th anniversary as well.
Yep.
And if that and if that doesn't happen, you know, the family's still going to continue to fight for justice.
Oh, no.
You continue to... Yep.
Scott Morrison's already told us he won't meet with us.
Mm.
I'll let you know now. He's already told us he doesn't want to meet with us. And yet he's out there today trying to pretend to invite women that have been violated against to have a closed-door meeting with him.
Mm.
What sort of Prime Minister are you?
He told
families, like he told us that he will not meet with us, he will not talk with us. So that until he will talk with us, we will continue to rally in the streets, we will continue to make noise, we will continue to platform any way we can through forums, panels, you know, meetings, radio interviews, whatever we need to do until this country and everyone that comes under the label of being a proud Australian understands there's no pride in being Australian.
Mm.
Until you fix the injustice that is genocide upon us.
Mm-hmm. Lizzie, thanks for joining us this morning on the program and updating us on what is happening next month as well. I would definitely love to get you back on maybe towards the end of this month or even the beginning of next month to shed a bit more light on this as well and the events that are coming up. Thank you, sis. It's always a pleasure to get you on the program.
No worries, my brother. Darren, darren. And thank you very much. Much love to everybody.
And if you are just tuning in, that was Lizzie Jarrett, proud Dangari woman, Gumbangia woman as well. And we were just having a chat about the rally that they have coming up next month and the amazing work that she does supporting families who have been affected by losing loved ones in custody. And if you've enjoyed the program this morning, you can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. tonight or go to our website at 989fm.com.au and follow the links to the podcast. And you can listen back to this program a little bit later on once it's uploaded. But in the meantime, when you're on our website and listening to Let's Talk, you can listen to previous Let's Talk programs. You can also catch us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And as always, it has been a pleasure. You've been listening to Let's Talk. Here on Mario Country on 98.9 FM.
Hey, you mob. Does your bub have their birth certificate? Deadly Choices has teamed up with the registry to give Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs a birth certificate package. You can choose from four deadly NRL-themed designs. Bub just needs to be 5 years or younger, born in Queensland, and up to date with their 715 health check and immunisations. Head to your local participating clinic and yarn to the reception team about getting an application. To find your closest participating clinic, head to deadlychoices.com.au.
A message from the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health.
Station sponsor. song, so long, so long, so long, long gone beyond.